As many of you are aware, the Systematic Theology book written by Dr. Alva Huffer was published for the first time 50 years ago. We have just had it reprinted, and it is now available as a first of the 50th anniversary. We are here to celebrate that occasion, and we've invited Dr. Alva Huffer to be here with us this afternoon. Dr. Huffer is a graduate of Oregon Bible College. He has served in many ways in our conference, in our churches. He was involved with the early work of missions in the Church of God. He was the president of Oregon Bible College. We're thankful that he has been serving as an adjunct instructor at Atlanta Bible College. And many of us in this room have traveled with Dr. Huffer to the Holy Land. He has made many trips there, over 25, I think, and is a very good tour guide in sharing the wonderful treasures of the Middle East. In addition to writing the book Systematic Theology, Alva is also the author of The Triumph of the Resurrection, and we're especially glad to have him here and also members of his family. Myra, Keith, and Lisa are all able to be here for this special presentation this afternoon. We've asked Dr. Huffer to take the next 15 or 20 minutes just to give you a little background on the writing of the book Systematic Theology. Many of us are not aware of that story of how that book came into being. He's brought a few things to display here, and we'd like to give him our undivided attention for the next 15 or 20 minutes. Following that, Dr. Huffer has agreed to autograph copies of both of his books, and he's going to be seated at the desk in the archives. Please purchase the books in the lobby. Come in here and go through the archives. Have him autograph your copies, and then glance around the archives a little bit. If you've not been in there yet, there are some displays in there to see. And then just head on around and go out the back door of the archives so that we don't have a traffic congestion jam here. And then make your way over to the other building around 6 o'clock for the evening meal. So it's my extreme pleasure to welcome Dr. Huffer to make his remarks.
Thank you very much, David Krogh. It's really an exciting time for me to be here with you all, with my many friends I've known over so many years, to celebrate Systematic Theology in its 50th year Golden Jubilee anniversary. And the book has been in continuous print all 50 years. And there have been 7 reprintings. In fact, the first year, in 1960, all the books were gone. The next year, they had the first reprinting. And it's been printed 7 times. And our current book cover is the 7th printing of Systematic Theology. And so special to be with you. And this is also a kind of anniversary year for me. This year, in September, I'm going to be 85 years of old. And one of the great benefits of living to many, many decades, you have more memories than people who haven't lived so long. And we have such wonderful memories of all of those years in the past. Also, this year is my 65th year as a minister in the Church of God General Conference. Starting, in 1945, I was a pastor. And during those years, I have been pastor of 10 groups in 7 states. At not only East Oregon Church of God, where I got my first license from the General Conference and the Indiana State Conference, signed by Willard Naylor, and so forth. And it's not only there, and in Illinois, and in Indiana, and then in Morristown, Tennessee, where I went in 1948 to help Belis and Iva May start a new church in Tennessee. But the big event happened on New Year's Day, 1950, when my wife, Awa, and I were married at Anderson Chapel in Hendersonville, North Carolina. And we were married on January 1st, 1950. Okay. And immediately we moved into my fourth congregation. We moved to Virginia. And we lived in Virginia for 5 years. And here, and the writing of systematic theology, the story of the writing, the publication, and the worldwide distribution of systematic, it's in every country of the world, it's on 6 different continents and so forth, and continues to be used. And so here are the 4 congregations where I was during when all these exciting things happened. In Virginia, 1950, 1954, and then here in Missouri, 1954, 1957, St. Louis, Morris Mill, Missouri, and then Grand Rapids, Michigan, in 1957 to 1961. And I lived in Grand Rapids at the Pennelwood Church when the book came out 50 years ago. And then we moved to Arizona in 1961, and we were there 43 years, you know. And I was pastor 9 years total of that time of the church. And then I moved to South Carolina to the Guthrie Grove Church in 2004, where my daughter Liz and my son-in-law is a pastor. Okay, but in Virginia is where systematic theology had its start. And you know, this was an exciting time to live in the Church of God General Conference. Ooh, I wished all of you could have been there to experience all of this. Our ministers, so many graduated from the college that began again in 1939. Here all of my ministers. Here there was a great unity among our ministers and a great feeling of brotherhood about in the two times a year that we met. There's this great feeling of brotherhood of all of our ministers, a great unity in our emphasis on the distinctive doctrines of the Church of God. And it was also a great surge of evangelism. The Church of God experienced a great surge of home missions, evangelism in your community, reaching out. And here it was going on all of that time. And here were groups going out and taking a special issue, the Restored Herald that Harold Doane had produced, you know. And here a special track he wrote, Introduction to the Church of God. And congregation went out to all the homes in their village or in their town. And many of those churches doubled in size. And many great workers became involved in the Church of God during these years. 1950s. Okay. And how did you evangelize? Okay. You evangelized by 2 media. One is the written word. And the other is radio. Radio was what was used in the great evangelism of this time. When I moved to Virginia, there was 5 groups, and 2 of the churches employed us. And we were at Fort Valley one Sunday, then Moortown the next Sunday, back and forth, and have Bible study Tuesday night, Wednesday night at one church, Thursday night at another. And then what did you do on the 5th Sundays? Oh, okay, here's Browntown, you know, over near Front Royal. And you went there on the 5th Sundays. That means every 3 months they had a pastor who was there, you know, giving the message and so forth. That's not often enough, you know. So we started going every Tuesday night to Browntown. And then having evangelistic services in the summer and Vacation Bible School. And Hollis Partlow and Hilda were the ones who started coming to the Browntown Church. And they were both baptized in a creek there. And then became one of our leading ministers, you know, Hollis Partlow. And Austin Railton up in the Winchester. Oh, he started coming to church, and they both went to Oregon Bible College and became ministers, you know, and so forth. And so then here in Virginia, after 2 years, C.F. Pryor came to pastor the Browntown Church. And then what did you do on Fifth Sunday? Washington, D.C. And for our Washington, D.C., I wrote the Constitution for them and everything, and they were organized. And here came Jeff Fletcher as the pastor of Washington, D.C. What are you going to do next? Here's Baltimore. We have this congregation of people in Baltimore. What are you going to do? Okay, we started going there, and here came Dean Moore, and he was pastor of the Baltimore church. So here it was. Every year, had another minister, another church, another radio program. Okay, we at this time, radio was very much used throughout the Church of God and our ministers. Harvey Krug had, in the 1940s, here he had radio messages, you know, and he and Harold Dunn had radio messages. And Kenneth Milne came to our church, okay, and he had great experience in radio, and he had programs in Macomb, Illinois on the radio. And here was Mildred Macy in Texas having radio on Saturdays, you know, for all the children and so forth. A great time. And then here in Chicago, Harold Doane began having a weekly message on a major radio station, you know. And during all this time, and I'd had a radio program in Morristown, Tennessee. And when we moved to Virginia in August, we started The Voice of Tomorrow, a 15-minute program from Winchester, Virginia. And then we added another station, you know, and on and on. And Kenneth Milne broadcast it from Macomb. And here it was, radio. And every Sunday, when we had the message, that I offered a copy of that sermon, you know, to people who would write in. And so here we had all of this, and I had a bulletin, a church bulletin for every Sunday to all five groups, the whole Virginia Conference. And when we had Virginia Conference, here our attendance of registered people was greater than what had been at General Conference the week before. 500 persons from seven states came. And it was a great time of excitement. And 1 year, here came Harvey Krug, and here he was there, you know, as guest speaker. And guess what his radio message was? God's clock. Because he was a watchmaker, you know, and so talented at everything. And David Krug, an 8-year-old boy, and his family were guests in our home. And this is what I was putting together, the first part of that systematic theology. And I said, you know, in those days, we didn't have computers. You know, we didn't really have access to Xerox copiers, you know. But we had the A.B. Dick mimeograph machine, I'll let you know. And we had the blue stencils, and we poured in the ink, and on the typewriter, we typed it up, and we turned the crank. And I said, you know, my guess is that David Krug, here he was part of systematic theology right then. He probably helped me turn the crank because I was putting together all of these sections of this. And this was a time when many tracts were written. You know, the printed word. I wrote 3 of them or more than that and so on. And I wrote booklets on selected subjects in my weekly bulletin. Sometimes it'd be 8 pages in the bulletin. The Restoration Herald printed every week. Every week it was printed. And they were busy printing tracts, printing all of this. Browntown, the youth group, ordered 1,000 tracts to distribute. And this was characteristic in the entire Church of God. From shore to shore, here it was. A great time of evangelism. And during this time, I purchased books on theology, you know, and I was reading and studying, and I was producing all the written word all the time, you know, every week, and so on. And also, we had a neighbor down the street who was a retired minister of one of the mainline churches, Evangelical Reformed, you know, and here were Dr. Barley. And he had this vast theological library in his home. And he said, "Alva, come and use any of the books you like." And I did. And this was, and I purchased books, Washington, D.C., on theology, and studying and all of this, and producing the written word all the time. And this is where I became acquainted with the concept of systematic theology. You know, here you know all about church history and all the different branches of theology. But what is systematic theology? Okay, well, systematic theology was the kind of the apex of all the theological courses, a synthesis. Here, everything that had been learned in Bible survey, Bible doctrine, all of was organized into separate divisions. And throughout history, there's been systematic theology. Throughout history, that theology has always been very special and have a special regard as the queen of the sciences. See, all the theology courses, all the other courses you study, okay, they're great and have great scholars and you need them. But here's all the theology courses. Okay? If systematic theology is the queen of the sciences, what is systematic theology but the queen's crown that connects all of the synthesis and from all the branches of theology, connecting that? And on the other side, here is all the courses you'd study in a community college or a university in general education. So systematic theology reaches not only down into Bible doctrine and church history, pastoral work and all, but reaches also in history, you know. And here it is in literature, in philosophy, psychology, and sociology, and even the natural sciences. And brings all of this together in one beautiful whole, you know? And I said, "Oh, that's fantastic." And when I started studying in that way and so forth, and I said, "Look here, look at all of our distinctive doctrines. They all fit in, you know?" And so systematic theology from eternity to eternity, here, it considers the major concepts of the Christian faith that is organized in a logical sequence. Where are you going to start? With God. What's going to be the final? The future. You know, here it is. Who's going to be right in the center? The Lord Jesus Christ. Systematic theology is Christ-centered, emphasizing Christ's threefold ministry, his earthly ministry in the past, his heavenly ministry today, and his new earthly ministry in the future. And all these ministers in this great brotherhood, and they, most of them believed in prayer. Okay, most of them believed that Christ is working today. He's the head of the church. Here he is. He's adding to the church daily, such as should be saved. Here, Christ is busy working in our life, and he wants to transform our lives to be just like him, Christ-centered. And here, all of these leading ministers in our church, I can name a dozen. Here, they believe this. Christ is working today. And that's why it's such a successful time in this great surge of evangelism that reached worldwide. Okay? At this time, Otto Dick, who had been superintendent of schools in Indiana, and his wife was my cousin, Blanche Dick. Okay, here it is. He became the president of Oregon Bible College. And he was president of Oregon Bible College here in 1953, while I was still in Virginia. and I always stayed at his house. And I explained to him this great idea about systematic theology. Here, God, man, sin, Christ, salvation, the church, and the future. And all the many concepts here would be here, you know, and so forth. And he said, ooh, this is great. Wouldn't this be a wonderful course for Oregon Bible College? What textbook do you recommend? I said, well, this book by that author is good, but not in the other. This book over here is good in the other, but not in this one. What do you recommend? And he said, Alva, why don't you write a book? What? Write the book? Yeah, why don't you write the book on systematic theology as a textbook for Oregon Bible College? And he said, I will see to it it's a required course, so you always have a market for the books, you know, and so on. You know, why don't you do that? And I said, okay, I will. And I hadn't realized that I had been writing segments of systematic theology for 3 years. And all this writing I had done for radio programs and for all these special booklets and all the tracks, and I hadn't realized it, you know, all that, you know, here it is. And so I wrote the book between 1953 and 1954. And the first one, we started May the 5th here in 1953, and here I finished it in May the 4th, 1954. And it was agreed that Clarence Lapp would be the one who'd be teaching the theological course at Oregon Bible College. And I would produce it. And so I would write it, and I'd write about 6 weeks worth or 8 weeks worth of the book while the students could be studying it. And while they were studying, what was I doing? Writing the next section. Here I go, writing on man, writing on sin. Christmas time, I was doing the part on Christ, you know? And then here's salvation, the church, and finally the future. You know, segments at a time. And what were we doing? Mimeographing all of these. And when the book was completed, I needed your help. Thank you. Okay. And so when it was finished, this is it. Here it is, and here it was that we had done segment 20 of them at a time, turning the mimeograph crank. And so here we had 321 pages here, mimeographed and so forth. And we had it ready, and I know that David Krug was there when I was mimeographing this first section. And then when they left, here came Clarence Lapp, and he helped me collate this book, because he was going to teach it. And so when it started in September, here they had the book, you know, and we kept it going. And so many of my minister friends said, we'd like to have a copy of this. How can we get a copy of this, you know? So when I saved the stencils, and I turned 30 more copies of this original book for all my many minister friends and all these people, and a lot of these people still have these. They're bringing them out, Albert, look at it. I still have this, you know, after all those years and so on. And so it was in the ministerial conference, 20 below zero, snow all over the ground. We always had minister conference in the when it was cold, you know, below zero. And here we had it, and I had presented to the ministers kind of the outline of this book and also of the concept of what systematic theology is. And what happened? Minister after minister stood up and said, I think that this book should be printed as a book for worldwide distribution, you know? And here all of them said, yes, let's this should be done, you know? And the General Conference should print this and so forth and make it available, you know. And Jim Watkins was the general manager. He said, yes, let's do this and so forth and so on. And so people everywhere would say, yes, this would be a great idea. And so the board of directors and some of the people said, well, how are we going to pay for it? Where are we going to print it? Let's print it at National Bible Institution. Yeah, let's print it there. And they had never printed a book this size. They were busy printing Restitution Herald every week, True Seekers Court, tracts after tracts after tracts, all this worldwide evangelism literature, you know, and so forth. And so how are we going to do it? Okay, they said, let's sell pre-publication copies of the book. Instead of $5.95 for a copy, here, $5. You get a bargain if you go ahead and buy it now. So how did they do this? All the churches, all over the United States and Canada, they appointed a chairman in their congregation to promote the book, to raise the money. I remember Kenneth Brewer was the one, the chairman at Brush Creek, and he's a brother, I'm probably sure, of a Louise Lapp, right? And so anyway, and the people raised the money, you know, buying copies ahead of time before it was printed. And then in Tempe, Arizona, where Vernus Wolfe was pastor, the church said, well, we haven't seen the book yet, but we know the author. And here is a lump sum of $500. We're sending to you right now, you know, for this fund, you know. And so the board director said, we don't have to worry. There's going to be money enough to do this, you know, and so on. And so it was done, you know. But it took time for all of this. And meanwhile, in 1954, we decided that we're going to move on to St. Louis, Missouri, and Morris Mill. And in Virginia, we kind of added a church every year, a minister every year, radio programs, all this distribution of literature. Let's call this the decade of evangelism. You know, keep on doing this. And Harold Doan became the head of the General Conference Executive Secretary, 1954, the same year we were going to Missouri. And he said, Alva, this is a great idea. Let's do this for the whole General Conference. Let's have, or change the name to Decade of Development. And he was in charge. He was editor of the Restitution Herald, the True Seekers Quarterly. He was executive secretary with the board of directors. And and it was a great year of evangelism. And he was till 1968. He was the head of all of this work and all that he did. A wonderful writer, you know, a great vision. You know, it was during his time the National Bible Institution, which the Canadians said that isn't right, we're part of it too. You know, he changed the name to Church of God General Conference. This is the time when they had pastoral aid given to local churches. This is the time when the Mission Builders League started. This is the time when they had this great more community crusades and all of that. And so Harold Doan said, okay, let's set the goals. Number one, we're going to see systematic theology printed as a book. Number two, we're going to have a Bible study course based on the book. Number three, we're going to have a film strip or slide set built on that. And they went on and off his goals. And the delegates of the conference said, yes, yes, let's do this, and so on. So it's a great time. And some people look back at this and say that was kind of like a golden age in the Church of God General Conference for all of these things. The National Missionary Society started back in 1952 or something, and instead of local ladies' organizations, all of them sending money to India, well, let's get it coordinated. Clarence Lapp was president the first year, then I became president the next year, And for the next decade or more, I was reelected constantly as president of the National Missionary Society with Ada Simpson in Grand Rapids as secretary and treasurer. Okay? And so here it was, this great time. And so we moved to Missouri. And in Missouri, we were there 3 years. And what I needed to do is start rewriting all of systematic theology, double-spaced, as a manuscript, getting it ready for the print shop in Oregon, Illinois. And so I did it, and I worked on it. And this was the great time of special meetings. And we were always on call. We went to Macomb 5 different times under 5 different pastors. And when Kenneth Milne was there, we had 14 baptisms. And these meetings were going on here, Ripley, all these places, and baptisms and so forth were happening. So when we were in Missouri, I was busy taking my typewriter along and typing the manuscript and kind of enlarging it, adding a whole section on the history of conditional immortality. Here it is, on and for those 3 years. A great time. Okay? Then in 1957, we moved to Pennewood, one of our great, well-organized, one of our big churches, one that was really interested in prayer and missions and believed that Christ is working in our lives today. You know? And it's a great time to be there. And so when we moved there, then we had enough of the manuscript to send to National Bible Institution, where at the print shop, Paul Johnson and his son Robert Johnson and all these workers, they started working and setting up the type and printing about 1957 on. And I'll show you here. Just the opening pages of it, and where we typed all of this, and auto dick checked it, you know, make sure all the grammar was perfect and everything. And then what they did at in the National Bible Institute, located in Oregon, Illinois, where we had our print shop, they would set up in print different pages of the book, and here had linotype. And this is the first one. This is started chapter one. This is the first sentence here. And they had a linotype, and they had liquid lead. And here they had like a big typewriter setting it all up, and this lead would drop down, liquid lead. And here make a line of type. So linotype was a line of type, you know. And this is what they did. But they only had so much lead. And after they printed so many copies of my book, they had to melt that lead down so they could use it again, and so forth. And what they would do, they would produce from, when they had the line of types, they'd have all these metal strips in a tray, and then they make a copy of the of that page. And they'd send it to me in Grand Rapids to proofread the galley proofs. And they do all of this. And I would check it and then send it back. And okay, they needed to do this or that and so on. And then they have the pages. They set up in pages and a page proof. And they did that all the time. And where was I? In Grand Rapids, Michigan. In Grand Rapids, Michigan. Has all these theological printing places. Here's Erdmann's and Zondervan, Kriegel's. Here's Baker Bookhouse, Blessings, Used Books Place, remember that? And so on. And what a wonderful place to be. Here, you know, why did the Lord want me to be there? Okay, this was the best place to do the final work on systematic theology. And here we had all access to all of these books and the very fine tuning that we would do. And then here's several new things. Was you have quoted 30 different copyrighted books, and Life magazine and Look magazine and all these books you quoted. How do you get permission to do it? So I went and talked to the head editor, Erdman's. I said, okay, when I send to these, what should I say? What should I ask for? He said, well, just have what you're going to quote and how you're going to use it. And so they'll be happy to give you permission to do it. I went to Baker Books place, and the head person there said, we have the names and the addresses of all these 30 people you want to contact, and here they are. I asked at Erdman's, should I put in an envelope, a stamped, self-addressed envelope? He said, no. All of these companies, they have postage stamps, you know, and so forth. And it was a big help, you know. And you know, we sent out all these letters. We sent a letter to Scotland and for a poem we had quoted. And they sent a telegram back. Yes, go ahead and print it. You have our permission. And all of these, it came right away, answers that almost the same week. Yes, 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 you can do all of this. Then another thing was, how about the index? Ah, in the very back, what page are you mentioning these authors? On what page the subject, the Bible said, what page the actual verses, the three indexes? We had to wait until we knew what page things were going to be on before we did it. And, you know, putting together that index in 1949 in the summer, no computer, no Xerox. What? How are you going to do all this, you know? The only way you do it is go through the book, and here every time you do this, write it on a piece of paper in the page and put it here in the file. And then you've got to get them all in alphabetical order. And my wife, Awa, and we had a teenager, a friend of our family, Nathan Moore. We spent hours and hours and hours eating pizza and also sorting out all of this, you know? But here, so here came 1959, and it was time to teach systematic theology again. And they had all of this printed except the indexes, you know, and the table of contents. So what they did, Paul Johnson did, go ahead and print up a bound copy of this that the students could use that fall, you know, at Oregon Bible College. And then in the next few weeks, well, then finally we had all of the index and all of this ready. And so when we went to a general conference in January, here the whole book was ready. It had all been completed. And here I remember arriving in Oregon, Illinois, and that's 20 below zero, and the snow and everything. Here we had problems at Sycamore, Illinois, and a farmhouse took all six of us in. And they called Clarence Lapp, and he came and towed Dean Moore's car the rest of the way into Oregon. And so I had this one copy of Systematic Theology they had sent to me ahead of time, you know. And I said, why don't I just give this book to these people? And I did. And that's what happened to the very first copy I had ever seen of this book. A book to be given away. I remember at General Conference, and when I got to Oregon, a button had fallen off my clothes, and Mary Krug was sewing it on. And here was Harvey Krug, who he and David had been so involved in systematic theology all these times. Here, he was the first one to ask, Alva, would you autograph my book? And so I did, you know. And then the next day, here was the minister's conference. And here I had a presentation, 17-page, of the history of conditional immortality for the minister. And then C.E. Randall got up and announced to the minister that finally this book had been published and they were available, you know. And these ministers, each one have to get up and give their testimonies. You know, how thrilled they were. And what happened? Immediately, people wanted to give it away. You know, people wanted to distribute it. Here was the Priscilla organization. And they said, let's put a copy of this book in the library of every seminary, every Bible Institute, Bible College, Christian liberal arts college, in their libraries. That's what we're going to do. And they did. And here the ministers took home carloads of books of all these people that had paid ahead of time and ones they wanted to give to. And what they, all these people, what they started doing? Taking them to the local libraries. Here, use as an evangelistic tool. Here it is. This is what we believe. You know, in this, our distinctive doctrines in a positive way. Here it is, you know. And so they go on and on. And at this time in London was a multimillionaire named Percy Bilton, who did a lot of important building throughout London. And he had become acquainted with Harold Doane's Restitution Herald and all of this. And he said, I used to be a Christadelphian. But here, the Church of God seemed more in the middle of the road, more logical, and all of this. And here he became. And he bought books after books to send all over the world to his business associates and all the Christadelphians. And the Christadelphians, they were so thrilled. They said, oh, here it is. Here's the things that we believe, you know. Although there were some things they didn't agree with, you know. But here, there were so many people buying Australia, so many in Australia, South America, and all over. And so here's the Church of God with the Christadelphian on the right-hand side of it and the Advent Christian on the left and many other conditional immortality groups. And the Christadelphians bought it, you know, and here it was. And they put it in libraries after libraries. And when we moved to Arizona, here, the people there spent so much time in giving books, you know, to all the big libraries. I was in San Francisco one day, and I had occasion, and I went to the public library, and here the book was, right on the page, you know. And many of these theological libraries, one person, the head of his seminary, he said, so-and-so at this other seminar, they got a book, I want one too, you know, and so on. And we had all the testimonies of people who write in. I have stacks of letters I could have brought. You know, here it is. And here these theological students said, we saw this book that Dr. Hooper wrote, and here it is. And, oh, we fell in love with it, and we want to have our own personal copy. And so they bought their own personal copies in these theological libraries and all of this. And then they had the project to say, well, why don't we send one to every country of the world? And we did. We went to the head librarian at Arizona State University and said, we'd like to have the names and addresses of an English reading person in all these countries. And they give us the name and the addresses and who to send it to. And people all over started raising money and said, here, Stan Ross then was in charge there. And Stan would send in the money and the name and the address, and he'd send books to these all these libraries. And pretty soon they said, okay, we have 77 countries. And then we have 111 countries covered. And pretty soon every country in the world had a copy, you know, that they were sent. And many people in the Tempe Church said, here, I'll pay for 4 copies. And here I'll pay for 10 copies, 10 countries. And all over in the Church of God, there was this feeling and this giving out the message of this. We have a wonderful message, they said, and they wanted to reach out, you know, to reach all of it. Is our time about up? Okay. Well, I better tell it. Thank you. Thank you. You're so encouraging. And one thing we didn't tell you, that then we started the Systematic Bible Study course. And I did it in Tempe. And I cut up a book and took a paragraph and pasted them up, you know. And they had radio messages in Phoenix. And we used all of this as tracks. And then it became Systematic Theology. And 1964, here it is already. And I have the mats here that were sent out to you in the newspaper. Harold Dawn did all these things, you know, and so on. And then was it to 1998 when we got on the internet with the Kirkpatricks in Hutchinson, Minnesota, you know, on. But every country of the world it has a copy, and more and more and more. And we certainly praise God. And I've been privileged to teach systematic theology at Atlanta Bible College in October, and then back in the spring. And I have it all visualized, panorama, three sides of the room with all these color panels and pictures and words and so on. And still, and there's one more thing. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, here was a person who's a member, a non-resident member of the Kokomo Church. He wrote to David Krogh and said that here, he wants to put it on the PDF format. He said this book should never go out of print. He said this was instrumental. Here he's one of the head computer experts at this big company in Fort Wayne. He said this should never go out of print. And we go put it on this so that this would happen. And so anyway, we're very thankful for what the Lord has done and is doing.
And how about we thank you for your faithful life of service.